Okay, here we go. Person that I said that I want to speak about today is the Vilna Gaon, a Talmudic superhero. Superhero is someone who's got like these superpowers that no one else has. He's like different than everyone else. Sometimes he can fly, or I don't know, he's the Flash or whatever. But the Vilna Gaon could do things that like no one else could. So I think it's a pretty apt description. His name, okay? Vilna Gaon's name is Rabbi Eliyahu ben Shlomo Zalman. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, Kramer, okay, that's his last name. They started having last names. Known as the Gaon of Vilna, known as the Gra. His year is 1720 to 1797. Now, in the 18th century, Vilna was blessed with many Talmidei Chachamim, and it was known as Yerushalayim de Lita, the Jerusalem of Lithuania. With all its brilliance, there was a child that was born there that would tower above them all. He exhibited extraordinary genius by Vilna standards. Not by our standards, by Vilna standards. I'll give you just some crazy examples. Crazy examples. By the time he was three. I have a grandson who's three. He knew the entire Siddur and Chumash by heart. Now, in the Gan that he went to for 3 and 4 year olds, the teacher began to test the bright kids on the Yudias of Tanakh. Okay? I bet if we asked around here our yeshiva, including Shana Bet and Shana Gimel, we would not do so well, and that would be with 18 and 19 year olds. Okay? These are 3 and 4 year olds. Okay, and here are the questions. Okay, question number one. Where is Avraham mentioned 2 times in a row in Chumash? So one kid yelled out, by a Kesh Yitzchak. Kodesh Baruch Hu said, Avraham, Avraham, Yefeth. And the Vilna Gaon added, yeah, but there's also another place when you put 2 psukim together. It says, Eila told us Yitzchak ben Avraham, period. Avraham, Olidat Yitzchak. So there you have, Avraham, Avraham. Okay, this is again 3-year-old Ellie. I don't know what they call him. Okay, another question. That the Gamenet threw out to the kids from Gan. Where can you find a pasuk with 8 words all ending with mem? 8 words in a row all ending with mem. So it's when Yaakov sent the presents to Esav, he sent him Izim Matayim, Tayasim Esrim, Rechelim Matayim, Veilim Esrim. Okay? And like I said, little 3-year-old Vilna Gaon knew that. Another question. Teacher said, give me 5 words in a row that all have 2 letters. Okay? In the Torah, 5 words in a row where each word is a 2-letter word. One of those in this week's parsha. Okay. The Vilna Gaon said, oh, there's 3 of them. Okay. One is from beginning of Noach, where it says, Vayolad Noach et Shem et Cham, and then Ve'et Yafet. Okay, fine. Another one. When Rachel Imenu had a child, Binyamin, the Mialedet said, Ki gam ze lach ben. And of course he knew this at 3. And from our parsha, ki yad al kis ya. Right? Lashem elochem emalik b'chol dor v'dor. Okay, fine. Well, like I said.
Went to Zilberman's.
Yeah, right. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in Zilberman's. Okay. I mentioned last week, some guys heard this. At the age of 6 and a half, his father taught him a lumdus shir, and he delivered it in the great synagogue in Vilna, in front of all the many great Talmidei Chachamim that were there. Later that week, at Shalosh Shudos, the Rav of the town, a person named Rabbi Yeshua Heschel, was praising Rabbi Shlomo Zalman for the accomplishment of his first grader, you know, who gave a lumdus shir. In in the shul. And someone who was there made a snide remark, said, ah, probably just has a good memory. Oh, right. So he memorized an hour-long lumda shir, and that's a little thing. But I guess in Vilna, you know, it's in Vilna. So the rabbi went over to little Eliyahu and said, are you up to the challenge? I'm going to send you into that room. Here's the sugya I want you to prepare a shir on. He came out after an hour and blew everyone away, giving a shir, saying all sorts of chidushim. And at that point, they said, okay, he's not your typical six-year-old. Later in life, he told over a chiddush to his son-in-law. And when his son-in-law said, wow, it's amazing, he said, yeah, I thought of that chiddush when I was seven. He was seven. Okay, when I was seven, I had like all these chidushim about the Mets and, you know, whatever, the Knicks. And okay, anyway, yes.
I remember learning a few times. When you see the Gra sometimes makes a comment on the wording of the actual Gemara that it actually was wrong.
I'm going to get to that.
So my question was...
I'll get to it all. If I don't answer...
Does that mean that the Gra, in a way, I'll say it differently... Were the
Tanaim
on such a level also?
Let me get there. Okay. By the age of seven, he finished Shas. I mean, who didn't finish Shas at the age of seven? He finished Shas, and his father set him up with a chavrusa, Ramosha Margoliot. Ramosha Margoliot was 10 years older and would later go on to write the Pnei Moshe, the main commentary on the Yerushalmi Gemara. When you open up Yerushalmi, instead of Rashi, you have the Pnei Moshe. So this 17-year-old was not a lightweight. He was the top 17-year-old in Vilna who would become one of the greatest Talmidei Chachamim of all time. And his father set up little 7-year-old Eliyahu with Moshe Margolios. And after a while, the Vilna Gaon just dropped him and said, man, I can't keep carrying this chavrusa. You know, it's like, you know, you're slowing me down. You know, I got to learn on my own. Okay. Said him, no hard feelings. You know, we'll still be friends. I bought him dinner. Okay. At the age of 8, he started learning Kabbalah and sciences, including astronomy. By 10, he had mastered all of Torah and science. Now, at this age, he's primarily now just learning the Masechtas from Moed and Nushim and Ezekiel. And on Simchas Torah, age of 11, he realizes, last year on Simchas Torah, I pledged to learn Zvachim and Menachos. And I was busy learning other stuff, so I didn't do it. So, okay, Shkoyach, almost cursed you out, very nice. Okay, now, that's meaningless for you guys listening. Now, at the age of 11, he realizes, wow, I made a pledge. So on Simchas Torah night, after the meal, he opened up his Gemara Zvachim and started learning. Now there was a guest that went to sleep and saw him learning. He woke up at midnight and he saw the Gra was still learning. He took a look and he saw it was on Daf Nun. He was amazed. He tested him. He saw he understood everything he was, you know, looking at. In the morning, the Gra had already finished Zvachim and he started learning Menachos. So in the night, just through the night, he went through Masechet Zvachim. Zvachim is like 120 daf of hard Karbanos Gemara.
How old is he?
11. But you didn't do that when you were 11? Okay, then in the morning, he pulled out Menachos. And before the afternoon was over, he finished Menachos, and he went and joined the dancing, knowing that he had just knocked off Zvachim and Menachos in less than a day. Okay. I mean, who doesn't do that? At the age of 18, he got married, obviously, because the Mishnah says, Ben Shimon Esrei L'Chuppah, like, Vilna Gaon's not going to follow that. So, Shimon Esrei L'Chuppah. And he went into a hut in the forest to learn, so there'd be no distractions. Only his wife knew where he was. She brought him food. He only slept 2 hours a day. He took a half-hour nap during the day, and 3 half-hour naps at night. But that was it, 2 hours. He slept in any 24 hours. He later on went into a self-imposed exile. Okay, This, you should know, has been done by others. People would sometimes go into self-imposed exile, wander around. People didn't know who they were. He did this for 5 to 8 years, where he only returned to his family on Chagim. Why did he do it? He doesn't tell us, but the conjecture amongst the historians are, one, he wanted to work on his midot. He go to a new place, no one knew who he was, so it helped for his anava. Wouldn't people be fawning on him, saying, oh, big tamachim, they have no idea who he is. It's like a friend of mine, who's this big rabbi, was at my house for Shabbos. And one of the gabayim said, yo, tell your friend to come to Hagba. So now, for those who've ever learned Megillah, Hagba is considered the biggest kavod. But in shuls, people don't know that. People think that the biggest kavod is a speaking part. Right? And they don't realize that Hagba is really the biggest kavod. So my friend was so happy. He said, I don't remember the last time I got to do Hagba. Probably go back to like high school. He goes, but now I'm like some rabbi. Never get Hagba. There's Hagba. Big guy, yo, come do Hagba, right? So he said, do Hagba. So the Vilna Gaon, like, he was good for his Anava. No one knew who he was. Good. One. Two. He learned from various Rabbanim in different communities. And three, I'm going to go back to what you said. He studied many, many manuscripts in Bate Midrashim, in libraries, many unpublished, as well as Midrashim and Rishonim. Now, based on these, the Gra made many emendations in the text of the printed Shas. Okay, you open up any daf of, you know, Gemara, and you'll see on the side, Hagot HaGra. Now, what would happen? When he would see a manuscript, he, based on his photographic memory, immediately knew if there were any words that were different from the printed text. He would right away know, the same way you would know, I don't know, if someone like printed out for you mistakes in the Star Spangled Banner. You go, well, that's not what it is. He knew Shas like that. And he would know if there was any mistakes. He could even explain how errors crept in. He said, oh, I understand. He copied over and someone underthought that he wrote a lamed and was really like, it was a tzadi, right? So he could see that someone saw that there was how the mistakes crept in. He would see how this emendation, this goes back to what you're saying, Moshe, how this emendation here fits in with all the other places in Shas where this is quoted, where this sugi is quoted. And only then, if it all worked out based on where it appears everywhere else, would he make an emendation based on manuscripts that he saw. But he never just, based on conjecture, said, oh, this probably, it's much easier if we just switch Rava and Rava. Let's just switch that, and then it all makes sense. He would never do that. He felt that was criminal. Anyone who does something like that should be excommunicated. So every emendation that he made was based on a manuscript that he saw after he, in his mind, went through how it fit in with every other place where the sugya might be quoted. Only then did he say, okay, there's another manuscript that says like this. It'll make more sense that the change should be made to this printed text. Just so you should realize, the fact that it's printed doesn't make it authoritative. I once heard Rabbi Beryl Wein speak, and he said that the people who printed the first Shas said, and we don't have a list of it, but something like, after they printed the Shas, they found something like 2,000 errors. Looks like it's not like, oh, well, how could anyone change? Like, even the people who printed it said, oh, there were mistakes that were made. Copyists, they made a mistake, right? So he's saying, based on manuscripts, what I saw, it would make more sense that it should read like this, and that's where the Hagot HaGra. So it's not like he just made emendations. He wasn't some Bible scholar that just said, oh, let's switch it around. Yes.
What languages did he speak?
I don't know. Now, the Hasmada, that, what's Hasmada mean?
Dedication,
diligence. And the breadth of his learning is overwhelming. The Gra learnt, okay, it's going to sound a little crazy, but 100 daf of Gemara every day. On Chagim, he learned the Masechta of the Chag. Oh, it's Pesach, which learned Pesach. Every Shabbos, he learned Shabbos and Erevin.
And Erevin.
Shabbos and Erevin. Wow. After Shabbos and Erevin. Okay, he made a Siyam on Shas every month. He did Chazara on Masechtas hundreds of times, probably Shabbos and Erevin thousands of times. He studied Kabbalah with the same intensity. He wrote a notebook. He wrote in a notebook all the minutes he was mevatel Torah. And on Yom Kippur, he would add up all the minutes that he's mevatel Torah that year, and he'd put it out in front of him, and he would cry about the bittul Torah. And each year would come to about 3 hours. We do that in one morning Seder, right? He would do 3 hours in a year of bittul Torah. Once his sister came to visit after many years of not seeing her, and after he spoke to her briefly, he said, oh, look, I got to get back to my learning. We'll have plenty of time in Olam Haba to catch up, but now I have to learn.
That's a famous line, no?
Yeah. When Rabbi Chaim Volozhin, who was considered like his Talmud Mufak, whatever that means, was 19, he complained to the Gra that he had reviewed Seder Moed. Okay, when he says Seder Moed, I assume he means all the Gemaras and not just the Mishnayos. 14 times, but he still didn't feel like he knew it. To which the Gra said, obviously. To which Rav Chaim said, what should I learn, like 101 times? Because there's a Gemara that says, you can't compare someone to learn something 100 to 101 times. To which the Vilna Gaon said, no, your whole life. You have to be your whole life. What, 14 times you're going to know it? Your whole life. Okay. Rav Chaim Volozhin tells us that once the Gra made a siyum on Kol HaTorah Kula. I don't even know what that means. You know, we're talking about a man who learns Torah, Nigla, Torah, Nis. They're like, what does that mean for him to finally say, yeah, I've learned all of Torah? I don't know. I can't even fathom what that means. The Pas HaShulchan, who was a Talmud of his, who moved to Eretz Israel, writes that the Gro would spend as much time on one sugya as he could to finish all of Shas. And the Gro sets a beautiful, if you think about it, comment on a famous Mishnah Perkei Avot. Famous Mishnah Perkei Avot says, "If ain't kemach, ain't Torah." Anyone ever hear this phrase? "If ain't kemach, ain't Torah." So what does it mean? Literally, what do we usually think it means? If there's no flour, there's no Torah. So he says, no. What do you have to do? You have to tochein bechita ad she'akemach. You have to take the Torah and grind it up and grind it up until your wheat becomes kemach, az yesh Torah. Only then do you have Torah. You have to learn a be'in. You have to learn it well. Once, Rav Chaim Volozhin says he was in town, and the Gra summoned him to his home. He had been involved in a difficult sugya. They discussed it, and eventually they came to a solution. And the Gra's eyes lit up, and he called for some food. Rav Chaim Volozhin said that the family told him, "We're so happy you came. He hasn't eaten in 3 days, because this sugya has been driving him crazy." He encouraged students to master a masechta because uvalechta chamaderach. You know, you have to be able to learn even when you don't have the luxury of sitting in front of a sefer. So, one student memorized all masechet sukkah. I mean, this is a student of the Vilna Gaon. It's not like, oh, I could pass a multiple choice test. This is okay. He memorized masechet sukkah. Seder. He comes to the Gra and he's ready to be tested. Listen to the questions. How many machlokot are there in Sukkah between Abaye and Rava? How many machlokot are between Rei and Rabbi Huda? How many between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel? Between Rabba and Rabbi Yosef? The guy's sitting there with his jaw hitting the table. Says, like, well, you don't know? Like, you can know the whole Masechta backwards and forwards. You don't know that. For the Gra, this was not learning the Masechta. The Gra had a spreadsheet, an Excel, I don't know. Everything just went into boom, boom, machlokot, the lines of a... He then told him, he not only did he answer his own questions, he told him, oh, what, all of this. He then said, he showed how everything fit together. He said, in Bavli, Yerushalmi, again, he didn't pick the Masechta, the guy came in and said, I know Sukkah, right? He just looked off the top of his head. He said, in Bavli, Yerushalmi, and Tosefta, there are mentioned 85 different types of invalid Sukkot and 91 valid Sukkot. Kiminyan Sukkah. With a vav chaser and sukkah with a vav male, 85 invalid, and with a vav male, 91 valid. And if you add them all up, and this is the Gra's mind. It was a computer. This wasn't, oh, he photographic memory. He can remember what it's on the page. He had a computer for a brain. Okay, he had a computer for a brain. Now, I don't remember this right now. It's coming to my head. I remember listening to a shiur about the Vilna Gaon, where this genius, well-known like genius, had heard about the Vilna Gaon. I remember the name right now, but it was a name that I recognized, like some philosopher. And he got an audience with the Gra. He said, "I have a lot of questions." He says, "Go for it." And he asked a bunch of questions, and the Gra listened. He says, "Anything else bothering you?" And he asked more and more and more. And the guy wrote the whole thing down. And in the end, he asked the Vilna Gaon something like 51 questions. He said, "Are you finished?" He said, "Yes." Okay. And the guy, then the Vilna Gaon answered, "In actuality, you do not ask 51 questions. You ask 24. Because questions 1, 6, 14, and 13 are all the same. Questions 26, 28, 20. And then he went and he proceeded to answer all of the questions. And the guy started to like say, but he goes, "Listen carefully to what I said." Then he repeated exactly, word for word, what he said, not adding or taking anything away. The guy walked away and said, "I've got no more questions." Like, this is the mind that he had. Okay. I don't know. I don't know. Rav Chaim Volozhin was considered the Talmud Mufak of the Gra, but he only saw him a few times a year. He would save up questions to discuss. Once he took his son Yitzhak, who would later on succeed him as Rosh Shiva in Volozhin, and Yitzhak tells us the wagon would just enter Vilna, his father turned white and began to tremble. And Rav Chaim Volozhin had an older brother, Zalman, who was considered a Gaon. And when people, okay, Daniel's now going to know this, when people said, "How could you, you know, the Vilna Gaon, it's like your brother." And he said, "No, the Vilna Gaon," he goes, "my brother knows Shas the way the average Jew knows Ashrei." So I say to you, Tzvi, in Ashrei, what word comes after Poseach? Good. What word becomes before Poseach? So the Vilna Gaon knew Shas backwards and forwards. It's Einecha. Okay. He knew, I'm sorry, Be'ito. I'm sorry, Einecha, it's the beginning of the puzzle, Be'ito. So it's, for the Vilna Gaon, it was all there, backwards, forwards, it was all right there. You can't compare. My brother's good. We're talking about different leagues, right? He was so brilliant, he didn't have time to write books. Most of what we have is written by his children or students or notes he wrote on the side of a sefer. He once told a student that he had 150 different Perushim for one Pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Some was written down. 150 different Perushim for one Pasuk.
The Gra.
Okay. We have some. We have about 70 Sifrei Gra, about half of them on Kabbalah. The Gra, although not a Kabbalist, was such an expert in Kabbalah, he said he would not be embarrassed to share his insights with Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. His son said that the Gra was a bigger Talmid Chacham in Nistar than in Nigla. And the Vilna Gaon often said that Nistar and Nigla complement each other. And if you really want to know, Pshat in the Pasuk, it's actually in the Nistar. And that there's more in common with the Pshat and the Nistar than there is in any Drushas or Ramazim. People sit there and go, "Oh, the Remez, that's like close to the mystical." No. The Pshat and the Nistar are most similar. Okay? As stated, he felt it was important to study sciences in order to understand Torah. He told the student to translate into Hebrew Euclid's geometry. And in the introduction, the student said that the Gra remarked, "One who is lacking in secular knowledge is lacking 100-fold in Torah," because it's all related. The Gra himself wrote a book on trigonometry, but he was opposed to the study of philosophy.
Do we have his book on trigonometry?
I guess so. Okay, it's not that long ago, probably. And although he had the utmost respect for the Rambam, he felt that his rationalist approach was based on philosophy and it kept him from the true path, which was Kabbalah. He even studied music because he felt that it helped understand the Shirei Halevim in the Beit HaMikdash and their Avoda. And plus, he said, without music, how could anyone really have Kavana? But more important than his books in science and history and geography is that we have a Perush Gra on almost all of Torah Shebichtam and Torah Shebapeh. We have the Gra on Chumash and Mishnah and Yerushalmi and Bavli, Tosefta, Mechilta, Sifra, Sifri, Midrash, Mizohar, Kabbalah, Shulchan Aruch. The Chazon Ish felt that if we had a first-team Hall of Famer, he's on it. direct this, you know, jumping from greatest of an era to greatest of an era. We go from Moshe Rabbeinu to Ezra Sofer. From Ezra Sofer to Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. From Rabbi Hanasi we go to Rabbi Ashi. From Ashi we go to the Rambam. From Rambam we go to the Gra. That was the Chazon Ish's pick, you know.
Rashi
didn't make the cut. Now what's ironic was because of his disputes with Chassidim, it's ironic that what we refer to him as the Gra, his contemporaries referred to him as Rabbi Eliyahu Chassid, because of his great piety. He wore a talus and tefillin all day. Okay? The minhag of people wearing talus and tefillin at mincha that you see in our yeshiva, or you see from the Zilberman crowd in the old city, is all because they're talmidim of the Gra. He kept chumras that are in the Gemara, even if not brought la'alacha, because he had kavod for chazal. But it doesn't mean he kept every chumra. For example, the Vilna Gaon did not wear tefillin Rabbeinu Tam. Why not? Because he said, if you want to be choshesh for every shita, there's 24 different pairs of tefillin you'd have to wear. Because he knew all the different shitas. We're sitting there going, really, is Rabbeinu Tam? He's like, you know, that was 24 actually. You know, so, okay. He learned Musar Sfarim. He learned Menorah Tamaor, which we have in English over here somewhere. He learned Chovos HaLevavos. But his highest praise was Mesillas Yesharim. He learned Mesillas Yesharim 101 times. He said if the Ramchal was still alive, he would go barefoot to go learn by him proper Mida. He felt that the Sefer, there's not an extra word in Mesillas Yesharim. Thought it was such an amazing Sefer. Just understand like what type of person he was. It was very difficult to get Arba Taminim in Vilna. Okay? To get citrus fruits, very, very difficult. So people go out of the way, try to get 1 year. It was extremely difficult. Only one very, very wealthy man able to get himself a set of Arba Mina. So Vilna Gaon went over to him and said, can I borrow your Arba Mina? And he said, on one condition, I get your schar for the mitzvah. And the Vilna Gaon said, absolutely. And he was thrilled. And when afterwards people said, like, why so happy? He said, all my life I wondered if I ever did a mitzvah actually lishma. Because I always knew in the back of my head that you get schar. But now I'm giving away my schar. So I'm actually just doing the mitzvah because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to do it. I'm so happy. I'm sure he got extra schar for that. But anyway, that's just me. So, you know, like, I just want to do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. I don't want schar. Okay? On his deathbed, the Vilna Gaon started to cry. The student said, Rebbe, what's with the tears? Not like there's a suffix which way you're going, you know? He said, I'll tell you, it's a very famous idea. He said, in this world, for a couple of kopecks, you can buy tzitzis, and you can wear tzitzis. And every second, you're makayim a mitzvah. When you die, that's it. There's no more opportunity for mitzvahs. So he's crying about that. Can't keep mitzvahs anymore. Wow. He had a good relationship with Rav Yaakov Krantz. Rav Yaakov Krantz was better known as the Dubna Magid. I don't know if anyone ever heard of him, the Magid of Dubna. He was a great speaker. He used to go around saying all sorts of mishalim, all sorts of parables. Okay, I have a book of his at home. Great parables.
He's a lot on Haggadah, no?
Could be. Yeah, could be quoted. He's great. Someone once asked him, how do you have such great parables? He said, I'll answer that with a parable. He said, some people, they like have a target and they shoot the arrow. And if they get a bullseye, you go, that's amazing. He goes, I shoot the arrow, then I draw the target around it afterwards. I always get a bullseye. What does he say? He goes, I have all the stories. I figure out what to fit into the stories. Anyway, so he once asked the Dubna Magid, give me Musar. The Magid's like, give me, God, give me Musar, give me Musar. So he gave him Musar. He says, okay, if I'm going to give you, I'll give you Musar. So he said that he quoted a pasuk about the people from stone being saved, that there's tzaddikim betocha ir, that there has to be a relationship between tzaddikim and the people around. And he says, look, it's no big kunz to be the Vilna Gaon. You're living off by yourself. What does it mean to a kunz? It's no big deal. It's no big deal for you to, let's say you be the Vilna Gaon out in the marketplace. And the Vilna Gaon started to cry. And he said, you're right. And then he said, But I have no chiyuv to do kuntzim. I don't have to put myself in those situations. I don't have to. Okay? So you're right. If you guys go off to a secular college and you still say frum, that'll be amazing. But he would say, there's no need for you to do that. Right? Okay, great. Now, one of the most famous svarim is a sefer called Maaseh Rav, which is written by students, and they just wrote about his minhagim. And many people, especially in Yerushalayim, follow, including Rav Bina here on the yeshiva, minhag hagra, in many different things. So I'm going to say a whole bunch. Tell me if you've heard of any of these. Okay? Certainly in Yerushalayim, there's many of them. So, for example, he changed the nusach in the davening, even including Shmon Esrei. And you'll see Siddurim. Has anyone ever seen a Siddur that says Nusach Hagra?
In the
okay. Good. Okay. My father has one. Nusach Hagra. Now, some of the things. The Gra doesn't sing Vishamro. On Friday night davening, right when we finish, you know, that bracha before Shmon Esrei, most shuls, they say Vishamro. The Vilna Gaon doesn't say it. I daven in a shul near Shalim where they don't say it Friday night because it's a hefsek. Right? What are you saying that for? Go from the bracha into Shmon Esrei.
I thought that it was only not said if you're not in a shul, if you're davening in a house minion.
Nope. That's Vayechulu.
No, that's
Vayechulu. Nope. The Shamru is just Minhag Hagra. Don't say it. Anyone been in a shul that has skipped the Shamru? Okay. Another one. Don't say Baruch Baruch Shemo. Okay, let's say Chazrat Zas, you just say Amen. Anyone ever see that?
Yes.
Okay, I went to the Morasha Kolo after I was in yeshiva. I was in camp, and then I went to visit people in Morasha Kolo. And I'm davening the minyan, mincha, and I'm the only guy saying Baruch Baruch Shmo. And I'm feeling really weird. I said, okay, these guys are firmer than me. They're in Kolo for the summer. Something's definitely up. You know, like, so after I finish, I go over to the rabbi. I go, what? He goes, minyan go grow. We don't say Baruch Baruch Shmo. Okay, fine. Didn't know that. Good. Tachnun. You always say Tachnun on your left arm, even if you're wearing tefillin. Has anyone ever seen that? Okay? Rav Soloveitchik did that.
Your left arm.
You always go on your left arm. Like we do it, let's say, righties. I do it on my left arm at Mincha, because I don't have my tefillin. But since I have my tefillin on my left arm, it's Shachar, so I do it on my other hand. So Vilna Gaon say left arm no matter what, even if you're wearing tefillin. That was a Minhag Hagra. I'm just saying, he had a reason. Minhag Hagra. Haftorah, said from a klaf. We do that here in this yeshiva. Okay, Haftorah from a klaf. When you bench, I do this. The bracha bonei Yerushalayim, say bonei Yerushalayim amen. You don't say bonei barachamav Yerushalayim amen, just bonei Yerushalayim amen, because Vilna Gaon said, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, it says in a pasuk, ki b'mish, what to say? Yerushalayim b'mishpati padeh. Yerushalayim is going to be redeemed by Mishpat. Not out of Rachamim. Or Rachamim. It's going to be Mishpat. So I don't need to say Bonei Barachamav Yerushalayim. Bonei Yerushalayim. Amen. Right? That was the Vilna Gaon. Okay. Rosh Chodesh. Used to be a time where Bina was makbid on it here in the yeshiva. I haven't seen him done it in many years. But the Vilna Gaon had a different way of dividing up the Aliyot for Rosh Chodesh.
He did it the last time? Not for some reason. I didn't know this happened. I remember it's like 2 months ago they did it.
Yeah. Okay. So usually we repeat the third pasuk, the Amarta Lehem, but according to the Vilna Gaon, you don't repeat. You say you do 1, 2, 3, then you do 5, 6, 7, 8, and then you like go back and start from like 5 through 8, and then the next two for Shabbat. There's a reason which I want to get into right now. But it's a different way of dividing it up. Yes.
Even any posting is allowed to do that to change up the order of.
So I'm going to get to that in a second. I'll get to that in a second. I say this because my father got into all this gra stuff. So when my father passed away, I figured I'd say Kaddish the way he would want me to say it. So I say Yiskadel v'Yiskadesh instead of Yiskadal v'Yiskadash, which is what it says in most Siddurim. But the Vilna Gaon said you should say Yiskadel v'Yiskadesh. And since my father got into Grun, he started doing that with the Grun. He had Grun Siddur. He got into all these Grun Minhagim later on in life after he retired. I figured as a tribute to my dad, I'll say Kaddish the way my dad would have wanted me to do it. So that's, ever since then, now I got used to it. That's how I say Kaddish. Only the I once heard Rav Ami say it, that he tries to do this, but usually people don't do it. Nikadesha Shimcha. Right? We all say it, or Nakti Shach Ben Aritzach, right? We all say it together. But according to the Vilna Gaon, it should only be said by the Shliach Tzibur. He's like telling us, let us praise God. The same way when you have a mezuman, I say Rebbe Sayin Avarech, and then you respond. So too, I'm saying Nikadesha Shimcha, and you respond, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. That's how in the Vilna Gaon shul, only the Shliach Tzibur would say Nikadesh Shimcha, no one else. But like most people don't do that. Again, that's like a gruff thing. Plus, there's a lot of other ideas. Chagim, for example, the Vilna Gaon is makbid. You have to eat and sleep in a sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. Why would you have to eat and sleep in a sukkah on Shmini Atzeret? Because it's something the seventh day. And it's seventh day of sukkahs, of course, you have to do it. Yantav Sheni, not sure in Chutzaros, you have to do it. Now, Chasidim stop doing it. Oh, it's at the Bechina, the Yerushalayim, whatever, some weird, whatever, not weird, some Hasidic idea. So Vilna Gaon said, you absolutely have to do this. So he would sit in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres, even if it was snowing. When obviously, you know, it's even Star Potem in the sukkah, but he wanted to prove a point. Says, hey, this is Shmini Atzeres, but it's Suffolk the seventh day. So he would sit there. And just the last one, there's so many more. Has anyone ever been in a Seder instead of having three matzahs? Yeah, only two. So there's also the Gra. Before him was the Rif. But he said, how could you call it Lechem Oni? What does Lechem Oni mean? Poor man's bread. When I have extra bread. When I have three instead of two. It says you start with two, you break half, I'm left with one and a half. Lechem Oni. What would we do? We end up having two and a half when I'm saying, that's weird. That's Lechem Oni. So the Gra had a whole bunch of things. Now he's known as the father of the Misnagdim and led a battle against the Chasidut, Chasidim. Twice putting them in Cherem.
Against,
absolutely, super against.
He's not himself a Chassid?
No. No, that's why I said it's ironic that he was called Eliyahu Chassid. That's just based on his piety. Okay, the Gemara talks about Chassidim Rishonim. It has nothing to do with Chassidut. They were just pious people. Why? He feared Messianism. He also, for those who remember the Maharal Shir, he feared practical Kabbalah. Because remember, when he was a kid, he was making a golem, and then the Malach told him not to. So he was opposed to practical Kabbalah. He felt Chassidim with the Baal Shem Tov and amulets. That was practical Kabbalah. He was opposed to that. And he practical Kabbalah, yeah, using it to like do miracles. Because he felt that he was making a golem when he was a kid, and the Malach told him not to. So he understood from that that we shouldn't be doing this. To what?
Like davening to the amulet.
Oh, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, now we also had the debacle of Shabtai Tzvi. And as I mentioned, 100 years later, you had the Jacob Frank followers where they all had orgies and shuls and they converted to Christianity. He lived during that time. So the fear of... what? I never mentioned that?
Who was Jacob Frank?
When I spoke about...
We need to share on Jacob Frank.
So, I didn't mention this. Okay, I think I mentioned it. Anyway, I probably mentioned it in whatever, my 3:30 class. After Shabtai Tzvi died, it didn't really die out. And there was a guy, Jacob Frank, about 100 years later, says a reincarnation of Shabtai Tzvi in a whole gathering. And part of his stuff was like they had sex orgies and shul and whatever. There was like all sorts of stuff. At the end, they all converted to Christianity. And this was during the time of the Vilna Gaon. So he was like wary of all this cultic type of existence. He was not happy with emphasizing saying tefillah was important as Talmud Torah, because if you do that, you're de-emphasizing Talmud Torah. He felt that, you know, keep saying don't worry, be happy is not a good thing, even if it became a best-selling song. He felt that I heard that guy committed to it. Anyway, Simcha. He said guilt is important. Guilt helps us do tshuva, right? Helps us do tshuva. So, Rav Shneur Zalman, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, tried to meet the Gra. The Gra wouldn't see him. Okay? He tried to end the battle. He wanted to, like, stop all the fighting. The Gra refused to see him. Okay? According to the Aruch HaShulchan, all the excommunications... I'm sorry. The Aruch HaShulchan was told by the Tzemach Tzedek. Was it Tzemach Tzedek? What? The third Lubavitcher Rebbe. Third Lubavitcher Rebbe told the Aruch HaShulchan, at least the Aruch HaShulchan says, that the Gra kept us in line. Chassidut might have gone off the deep end. Crazy radical stuff that was going on. And the Gra kept us in line. Okay. Yes.
Why do the Gra and the Baal HaTanya have so many different similar shitas also?
Look, both of them are big Talmidei Chacham, and they're just going through different things. You're right. When I was in Smicha, I had to look up the Shulchan Aruch HaRav and see what the Baal HaTanya wrote, and I had to look up the Bir HaGra and see what the Gra wrote.
Yeah, but I'm saying, okay, for something like Zman Tefillah, they have the same exact...
Yeah,
and
They're based on earlier. They're both those. Why do you think before that no one had Zmanim? They had Zmanim before that. We just know that as like you know the Gra and the Baal HaTanya. These were opinions of the Rishonim. The Rishonim was discussing already. How do I count the day? They just agree that that's how you count the day. Now, yeah.
Is Hasidut today the same Hasidut back then that the Gra was against?
So people would argue. Some would argue no, they were more radical.
So today it's like Hasidim are existing?
It could be, yeah.
I'd say in some ways they're more radical
than back then. You don't know how radical they were back then. They did a lot of crazy things. Yeah, the people, this you can read about it. They did cartwheels and shul and jumping jacks and they did all sorts of thrusting of their pelvis in davening because they were like having relations with the Shechina. Whatever, there's a lot of crazy things that was going on. Okay. They did a C block dance. Okay. What? I'm just saying there were different things that were going on, like you judging this and that. I don't know, I'm just saying. Now, at one point in his life, he decides to make Aliyah. He writes a famous ethical will to his wife, and very interesting, telling his wife, don't let our daughters go to shul on Shabbos. Igeret HaGra, because they're just going to go there and see everyone wearing nice clothes. They're going to be jealous and have nice clothes. Like, very interesting things. Tells his wife, treat my mother well. You know, get along with your mother-in-law. It's a very interesting, you know, thing that, like, you see, like, the human side of the Vilna Gaon, telling his wife how to take care of the family because he's going off to Eretz Yisrael. But he makes an about face. And he never explains why. He says, heaven didn't let me go. He never makes Eretz Yisrael. He says lots of ideas. One idea was suggested by one of my Rebbeim, Rav Rakefet, was maybe he saw how widespread Hasidut was in Poland, and he returned to fight the fight. He was fighting against all Hasidus that he saw in Russia. But when he was making his way through Poland to get to Eretz Yisrael, and he saw how widespread it was, he said, all right, I can't abandon my post. I have to keep, you know, fighting the Hasidim. He felt that everything is hinted to in the Torah, and he would find sources for every Maimer Chazal. It's the coolest thing. Perki Avot, where you would say everything just sounds like a bunch of Yerba quotes. And the Vilna Gaon says, no, this is based on this, based on this, based on this, based on this. He found a source for everything. Okay, I'll just give you a few because time is running late. He was once at a Pidyon HaBen. Random Pidyon HaBen. Happened to be Shabbos Bereishis. And some guy goes over like, you know, like basically like stump the rabbi. He goes, all right, Rabbi Vilna Gaon, you. Give me a source for Pidyon HaBen from the Parsha. And he says, obviously, first word, Bereishis. Bereishis is Ben Rishon Achar Shloshim Yom Tipadeh. Duh. Ask me the hard one, you know. So, like that, you know, boom. Okay. I know. When the Eved Avraham says, maybe she won't come, you know, back with me, right, says to Avram, maybe she won't come back with me. Chazal said that Eved Avram had his own daughter that he wanted to marry off. Okay, the Vilna Gaon said, where did Chazal get it from? Because there's two ways of saying maybe. You could say ulai, or you could say pen. Now, what's the difference between ulai and pen?
Ulai is maybe, and pen is like bad.
Right, pen is like less, like negative. So he should have said, oh, less she not come with me, pen. He used the word ulai, and not only did he write ulai, it was a vav chaser. So you're going to read it as elai. I want her to come to me. Elai.
Like
what?
Like
yeah. Right. So elai, come to me. Ayin tachat ayin. What does the Gemara say? Are you supposed to do an eye for an eye? No. What are you supposed to give instead?
Kesef.
Here's a very cool one. What letter is tachat ayin?
What letter?
What letter? Is tachat the letter ayin?
In the Torah?
In the Torah. No, in right. Alphabet.
Sadr.
What?
Sadr. T.
Pei.
Underneath the ayin. Pei. What letter is tachat yud?
Tachat meaning the opposite?
Underneath. So I have an alphabet. Aleph, Bet, Gimel, Dalet. Chaf. What letter is tachat anun? Samach. If you take those letters, you have kesef. Ayin, tachat ayin. So you have to pay instead what? Money. So the letters underneath ayin is kesef. Okay? He learned out from the Tamei HaMikra. Right? I hear you practicing Tulane all the time. From the Tamei HaMikra, he learned out. Chazal say, beginning of Parshas Vayigash, why did Yehuda go to fight with Yosef? He goes, it's right there in the Tamei HaMikra. It says in the Pasuk, you know, Vayigash, I love Yehuda, Vayomer bi Adonai. Kadma v'azla revi, zarka munach sagol. What does kadma v'azla mean? He got up and he went. Okay, kadma v'azla revi, the fourth son, Yehuda. Why? Zarka munach sagol. He already said, I'll be thrown out of my olam haba if I don't bring back Binyamin. So he says, why did Yehuda go? You see, in the Tamei HaMikra. The Tamei HaMikra is already giving me shot on the pasuk. Okay, I have to skip because there's no time. The Vilna Gaon was viewed by his contemporary as a throwback to the period of the Rishonim, Rashba, Ramban. He argues hundreds of times on the Shulchan Aruch. Would any other Achron do it? No. He didn't feel beholden to, like, he knew. His Bira Gros quoted all the time by the Mishnah Berurah. He was never associated, now I'm going to end with the way Rabbi Wein ended a shir about him once. He was never associated with the yeshiva, but he definitely influenced the yeshiva movement. Because we said he encouraged Reb Chaim Volozhin to start Volozhin. He influenced the Musar movement by endorsing the learning of Maseiros Yesharim. His influence is felt in halacha, even though he never wrote a halacha sefer. His careful analysis of text of Tanakh and grammar influenced, amongst others, the Malbim, the Ksav HaKabbalah, the Nitziv, the Meshech Chachma. He never held a public position, but his influence was felt not just in his generation, but every succeeding generation. Eliyahu ben Zalman Kramer, the Gra, or simply known as the Gaon, was one of a kind, was a Talmudic superhero. All right, Shkoyach, guys. What? 1720 to 1797.